D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and Connor Newt here with you. We are live at First Horizon Park, where the Nashville Sounds will host the Gwinnett Stripers. First pitch is at 6:35 p.m. All of our coverage at 94.9 The Fan. Momentarily, we will be joined by Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL Insider. We hear he's doing a rehearsal for TV. The NHL draft starts tomorrow. Elliot Freeman, incredibly telegenic, I would say. Mm-hmm. So he's just getting in some practice, but he'll join us as soon as he can. And when he does join us, he is presented by Old National Bank and Green Ventures Landscaping.
And can we give a quick shout out?
Yes.
While we await Elliot. Great news today for a former Predator. Mm-hmm. Joel Ward, who was a assistant coach for the Vegas Golden Knights. They elevated their AHL coach to their head coach. They did not bring back John Tortorella. That opened up the head coaching position there, and they have put Joel Ward in that spot.
Yes.
So he is an AHL head coach.
Yes.
Good for Joel. I mean, one of the best
guys.
And full disclosure, the late Aaron Donick, Joel Ward, absolutely in his her top three favorite players. Maybe only behind Pekka Rinne and UC Saros. Uh-huh. But Joel Ward, he did some great things for Stars when he was here. He did a lot of great stuff in the community. He had famously, you know, one of the big brother to, I forget Malik's last name, but kind of helped a young man while he was playing. And even after he left the Predators and went to other places, he stayed on it and made sure. And Malik has been a really good success story. But Joel Ward is a man of a lot of different talents. I want that guy to do well.
Yes. I had the pleasure of covering Joel Ward as a player when he left Nashville and went to Washington.
Yes.
And, yeah, he is an absolute.
You can't not like Joel
Ward. No, he has an infectious personality. It's awesome to see him doing so well. I know a lot of Predators fans, longtime Predators fans, will have a soft spot for Joel Ward. Which playoff run was Joel Ward – like lights, was that
for he earned a big he was an absolute nobody when he came to the Predators. So you know, just nobody had heard of him. He had never played in the, you know, with any significant time in the NHL. He made the team in 2010-2011.
He had 13 points in 12 playoff games in 2011.
The first playoff series the Predators ever won against the Ducks, and then they took the number one seed Vancouver to six games. He played some great hockey in that series, and then he got a big contract. And he had, if I remember correctly, a Game 7 overtime winner
for Washington against Boston.
So he had
when
some big
Boston
moments.
Was the defending Stanley Cup champions. Let's go to our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL Insider. Elliot, I'm so glad you're feeling better. How are you?
Oh, I'm much better, thank you. I appreciate you bearing with me last week. I lost my voice. I don't know what happened, but as my wife said, it is proof. I talk too much.
Well, Willie can relate. Yes. He lost his voice during a Predators broadcast earlier in the season, so he felt your pain. We're glad you're feeling better. So, Elliot, since we did not speak to you last week, the Predators have made two trades since we last spoke to you. Ross Colton and Jack Drury, both from the Colorado Avalanche. What do you think these trades tell us about Chris McFarland's intentions for the Predators this upcoming season?
Well, I think that I think the main thing is that it's whatever changes you guys make right now at the very short, Adam, it gives you a lot more depth, particularly at center, than you had. And I think that the way that the Predators are looking is we have to add everything. Like, I was asking around because I knew I was coming on the show today, like, what do you guys think the Predators are going to do with the draft? And someone said to me, they're going to get the best possible player. Like, they're not fixated on position. They're not fixated on, you know, what we need this right now. It is just get the best possible player to bring players into our system. And that's what they wanted to do. Now, the thing about Colton that's interesting is that this is a huge year for him. And that he's got, this is his last year of his contract, and he has a chance, if he has a good year, to get a big deal the way these contracts are going now. I think what's going to be interesting about it is it's either going to be in Nashville and he plays really well and the team plays really well this year, or he has a great year and at the deadline, if Nashville's out, maybe they can get even more for him. But I just think right now the word on the Predators is, let's just get better. Let's just bring in more good players. And that's, I think, what they're trying to do.
Elliot, I have this image of your phone caught on fire just because of all of the action going on in the NHL over these past couple of days. Your phone, I'm sure, is overheating from all of the time you've been spending on it. We saw another big deal earlier today, Valerie Nichushkin being traded by Colorado to Columbus, but Alex Tuch on the move, Bo Byram on the move, Jordan Kyrou, Simone Nemitz, of course, Brady Tkachuk. And we were having this conversation the other day, Elliot. I'm wondering if Chris McFarland could pounce on this seller's market and take advantage of these prices for quality players, because the Predators do have quality players. Do you see that happening?
I see the possibility of it, yes. You know, first of all, somebody joked with me after they made the deal for Drury. Someone joked with me that maybe that McFarland's Rolodex only had Joe Sakic's number in it. And I got a good laugh out of that one. Oh, here, let me just move away. They're playing. I'm on the draft floor, and they're playing some music right now. I'm just going to move out. But look, as you guys know, and we've talked about this ad nauseum, one of the issues there is a lot of the key Predators players have no trade or no move clauses. They have control. And I think that one of the things they're starting to do is just figure out, okay, how does everybody feel? And so far they've kept a pretty good lid on it. I haven't heard anything unusual out of Nashville. I just think that right now, when it comes to McFarland, his goal is to simply, we're going to make this team better. And if he does, that's what I've heard, because I knew I was coming on. I was like, what are you hearing from Nashville? How can we get better? And I know it sounds stupid and it's not as in-depth as you'd like, but that is the message that he's been sending to other teams. I want to make us better.
Elliot, now that we've seen so many notable players on the move, I just listed a lot of them. Which player are you now watching most closely?
Jason Robertson.
And what do you think is going to happen there?
From Dallas. Last I heard, they were about $2 million apart per season. It's a sizable gap. And one of the things that's interesting about that situation is that, like Tennessee, Texas is a no-tax state, right?
Yes.
So I think they paid Rantanen 8x12. I think that's their offer to Robertson, and maybe a bit. There's probably some room to negotiate a bit, but I think that Robertson's at least $2 million away. And you know, when you think about where he could go potentially, with Texas's tax advantages, not everywhere would that be a good trade-off. But I think that that's where they are right now, and I think Dallas is investigating trading.
Now, Elliot, in this year's draft, do you expect the Predators to put in a package to move up in the draft from the 10th spot, or do you expect them to stay at the 10th?
I think, honestly, Derek, I almost called you Anthony Mason.
The Knicks are the champions.
About eight inches shorter.
He did play at Nashville. He played at Tennessee State back in the day, Anthony Mason.
But I'm still a very physical, intimidating player, Derek.
Yes.
You know, honestly, Derek, I think what's going to happen tomorrow night is that I think McKenna's going to go one to Toronto. And then I think you're going to see, depending on what happens from there, I think San Jose is going to take a player named Ivar Stenberg, another center second, I think. But after that, there's a really interesting situation near the top of the draft. There is a player from Ontario up here. His name is Caleb Malhotra. He's a really good young prospect. Vancouver has the number 3 pick, and they could use a player like that. But Vancouver's new head coach is Caleb Malhotra's father, Manny. And I don't know how everybody feels about this. So I think, depending on what happens, what I bet is going to happen, Derek, is that I think as players start to come off the board, I think teams are going to, and somebody starts to drop or gets closer to where Nashville picks, they're going to get calls. And at that point in time, Chris McFarland and the scouting staff, they're going to decide, are we married to somebody who's coming dropping to us or what's available here? Because they're going to be tempted. Someone's going to fall, and someone from behind is going to call them and say, hey, we've got a guy here, and McFarland's going to ask, what are you going to give me to do it? I guarantee to you that will happen tomorrow.
And Elliot, another sort of macro question without getting into the weeds on the prospects, because, you know, I know that's not your area of emphasis, and then our listeners, we don't get a chance to watch these guys anyway.
Right, you guys, but it's not like college football, I understand.
Right, so do you think the quality of player at 10, this is a pretty good year to get somebody at 10?
I think that it's not the best year, but it's not a terrible year. We have two draft experts, and one of them thinks there's a group of six and then another group of six, so 10 would be in the bottom of his second group. Another one, he's got like a group of nine and then a group of five. So 10 is right after his first tier. So you'd be getting a guy who I would say at 10, wouldn't I necessarily say like an A, probably like an A minus B plus player based on what these guys believe.
Let's turn our attention to the market. And I think it's something to keep our eye on here with regards to Jack Drury, who is a restricted free agent. They're going to need to sign a contract. We asked you a couple weeks ago when Michael McCarron signed his deal. It was a great indicator of where the market is going, especially for centers. And so we had this thought today, just looking at some projections that we're seeing, is it inconceivable that Jack Drury, in the first year of his new contract in this new market, is going to make about the same as Ryan O'Reilly in the final year of his old contract, which is considered one of the best bang-for-your-buck deals in the league?
Yeah, it's possible. It's possible.
So what does that say? Like, it's just people will have a hard time grasping that, right? But it's just where the cap is going.
I understand that, Willie. Like, I do. Like, but I think that is a little bit easy. Like, for example, Tage Thompson, American hero Tage Thompson, yesterday, last night, Buffalo signed a player named Zach Benson, who's a really good young player for them, had a great playoff, to a contract extension that I think is $300,000 more a year than Tage Thompson. And people were like, "How Zach Benson's good, but how could he make more than American hero Tage Thompson?"
Right.
And I'm like, it's a birth certificate, right? Like, the cap was somewhere when Thompson signed, and now the cap is somewhere else, and it's just that it's gone a lot higher, and that's just the way it goes. Like, the cap goes up, and that's the way I would say it. Like, I understand why you'd look and say, how can Jack Drury be making the same as Ryan O'Reilly? Like, I get it, but sometimes if you're born a little bit later, the cap goes up higher, you reap the rewards. I mean, there's not much you can really do about it.
Another concept we've discussed here, because Chris McFarland has had a theme of saying, I'm looking for those players in their mid-20s. That's what the roster right now lacks.
One thing you will learn about Chris McFarland is he says the same thing a lot.
Okay, so we're going to pick up on the themes, right? That was probably good to have a professor like that in college. Yeah. Just keep pounding in the mid of my head, the general
like
themes.
I heard he's been saying, we just need to get better. We need better players. We need to get better. Yes.
So he has his sights set on those middle 20s guys, which are not easy to find. Drury is in that range.
Yep.
We saw the deal for Simone Nemitz and how much Calgary was able to how much they had to give up for a player like that and then commit to that player. There's a couple other guys out there like Mason McTavish. You hear some stuff about Mishkov in Philadelphia.
Guys, I have to take a call here. Please excuse me.
Yes.
Okay.
Up the moment. This could be big.
Might
we have a scoop on the other side of this call?
Well, I'll have to monitor Twitter.
I don't think he took a pause to answer my question.
Yes.
Let me think about that. Like, who do you think's on the line? Who do you think's on the line?
Let me think about that.
Wayne Gretzky on the other line?
That's a good question.
Or is it his wife?
Either or, he got to take it. Both very important people.
Well, I'm just looking at now. I'm just looking at Twitter, so to find out.
He had to. Oh man, that had to be big. Then.
Yeah. So why? Let's leave everybody on that cliffhanger and take a break. 615-737-1025.
Do you think this is going to be a long conversation?
I don't know.
We just traded X for Y. Thank you. Tweet. I'm back.
Okay, we'll give him a couple minutes. We can give him a couple minutes.
Hey, it has to be something important, you know.
Yes. Oh yeah, he doesn't do that very often.
No.
Breaking news.
And I would like I believe it's safe to say that each week when he comes on for 15 minutes, during those 15 minutes, he usually gets some ticks.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So the fact that he had to take the call.
Has that ever happened, Willie?
Where somebody had to bolt because it was an important call, breaking news.
Boom! They
I don't
go.
Know. It wasn't for that, but I remember one time we were talking to Steve Spurrier, and it was Steve Spurrier, big time. You know, this was not when he was coaching Florida, but he was coaching South Carolina, and we were so excited. We got Steve Spurrier on the line. This is great. We're talking to Coach Spurrier, and you know, we'd have a few minutes. It was good. It was good, and all of a sudden he goes, guys, I got to go right now. See you later. I mean, he just ended it right in the middle. Like, we were having this great, oh, get Steve Spurrier on. This is awesome. Guys, I got to go. Click. I've enjoyed talking to you guys. Got to go.
Dylan and Antioch says, what is happening? We will find out. We will take a break. 615-737-1025. Hopefully, Elliot Freeman will rejoin us on the other side. We're going to be monitoring Twitter for the next 5 minutes. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Elliot Freeman has not called back. Hopefully everything is okay.
Yes.
We assume he's getting a juicy tip from a source. I have not seen anything from Elliot Freeman on social media, but we hope he will call back and rejoin us because we always enjoy our conversations with Elliot Freeman. One trade he is not breaking, and this is a real name. I do appreciate this. The New Jersey Devils acquired a player today from the Detroit Red Wings. His name is Amadeus Lombardi.
Oh, wow.
Amadeus Lombardi. What a great name.
Wow.
I know nothing about
him. I would have never known you could put those two names together.
Really? Yeah, exactly.
That's odd.
Amadeus.
Right. So Falco will be the theme song played. Amadeus, when he joins the team. There's no question. It's a no-brainer.
Yes. One texter says on Elliot having to leave the program briefly, that is Adam when his wife calls about picking up on Crustables.
Possibly.
All right. We've got Elliot Freeman of Sportsnet back on the line. Elliot, thank you for rejoining us. Hopefully everything is okay.
Yeah. I'm not going to say what it is. I can't yet, but it's been something I've been working on. So
okay. Like,
there's some stuff brewing tonight, but this is not – it's not done yet, so – I can't say it. Believe me, I love it. If it was Predators related, I would have said, look, I'm on national radio right now and I want to do it, but it's not, so I can't.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, but
you say this could be significant. It could be, whatever it is.
Yeah, it's a significant player.
Okay.
Okay. Ah. All right.
We're intrigued.
We will keep an eye on it. But before you had to leave, Elliot, we were talking about the younger players, the mid to low 20-somethings who have been traded. Nemitz has been traded. There's rumors about McTavish. There are rumors about Michkov. Willie, it was your question.
What do you think about the market and the assets it's taking to get a guy like that? Because that McFarland, as we said in the previous segment, seems like he's interested in that type of player at that age.
Yes. Well, look, like we just saw a guy, Bowen Byram, who's what, 25? Got traded for the fourth overall draft pick. Like those trades like that haven't happened in like 20 years. And so what I think has happened this year, guys, is that there's the cap is exploding after years of flat due to COVID. They went up $9 million last year. It's going up $9 million this year and it's going up $9 million next year. So if you want to spend, everybody's got cap room.
Everybody's got pressure from their fans to be better. The free agent class, the two best free agents are already gone, Alex Tuck and Charlie Coyle. There really aren't a lot of free agents out there to make an impact, if any at all. What's your only other way of getting better? Trade. So it was funny. Like, I was talking to somebody today, and I said, who's out there being in trade talk? He said, it would be faster if I told you who's not getting going to get traded this summer. He said, there might be 20 players in the league that nobody will trade. So, like, it is crazy out there, and people are desperate to get better. And that's why, especially, like, a team like Chicago, like, they have a lot of picks and prospects. They need established players. I think in a lot of other situations, if they didn't have the draft picks they did, they wouldn't have made that trade. But I just think the pressure on these teams to get better is enormous. And trade this year is really the only way to do it with the lack of high-level free agents out there.
I think we see the why of Chicago. We talked about this in our sphere of influence, where a lot of people are wondering, would it be best for the what would it be like if the Predators decided to take it all the way down to the ground floor, like Chicago? But Chicago, like you said, wants to accelerate this process. They're getting tired of spinning the wheels here. But if you take that away, did you agree with the consensus that that was a very one-sided deal against the Blackhawks, that they shouldn't have given up as much as they did?
So initially when I first heard it, I was like, what? Like, I was surprised if anybody else. You know, as a matter of fact, like, I'd heard that the fourth overall pick was going probably about 20 minutes before I reported, just because I wasn't sure. Like, I was like, I don't know if I feel like pressing send on this tweet, if I feel confident about it. And, you know, I think what kind of happened was but then, look, this is why I think they did it. Number one, they have loved Bo and Byram for a long time. They, like, there are people on their staff. They had a chance to draft him when he in his draft year, and they passed. And there are some people who still there, like, they've lusted after him ever since then. Number two, they have a ton of prospects and picks, a ton of them. And number three, Bowen Byram has wanted to be a number one defenseman. That is a confident, confident kid. He had Cale Makar, one of the best in the world in Denver. And he had Rasmus Dahlin, who could become one of the best in the world in Buffalo. He wants to be number one. He's wired to be number one. And Chicago needs it. And I think you reach a point where you say, we don't need potentials. We need real. And Chicago took the jump. You know what, guys? I hope it works, because that means more teams will do it.
Elliot, before we let you go, I am fascinated by what could happen with Connor Hellebuyck. And my question for you is, if that were to happen, if Connor Hellebuyck were to be traded, there's a lot of smoke around Florida, for instance, what would that mean for the Jets franchise? We know that Winnipeg has a hard time attracting free agents. It's not a place a lot of players want to go. And if a recent MVP and gold medal winning goalie leaves, what does that mean for the Jets?
It's tough. Like, they don't want to do this, Adam. They don't want to do this. Not one bit. But sometimes you get backed into a corner, and this is one of those times for Winnipeg. I think it's more likely than not he will be traded. I'll tell you this. You know where I think there's a chance he ends up? Carolina.
Interesting.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL Insider, has been our guest on D-Mace. Vingan and Donick. He joins us every week during hockey season. And he is presented by Old National Bank and Green Ventures Landscaping. Elliot, thank you so much for your time. Enjoy the draft.
All right. Take care, boys.
615-737-1025. I wonder if that was the call that Elliot got. Maybe something about Connor Hellebuyck.
Was it Carolina on line one?
I don't know.
Can you imagine if Carolina gets Hellebuyck? It's always been sort of the area that they have let be average and just figured we won't spend the money there. We'll spend the money elsewhere, and we'll be so good that we just need good goalies that don't get us beat. If they have a goalie that's a difference maker, wow, if they pull that off.
And
because they have a lot of cap space, they have a lot of assets, they've been very smart, Carolina, very smart.
And, I mean, I'm sure Predators fans wouldn't be upset if the Jets stunk, but I do wonder what that would mean for Winnipeg. That is an organization that has struggled to bring in high-profile players. Nobody really wants to play in Winnipeg now. Mark Scheifele signed long-term along with Hellebuyck. But Hellebuyck apparently might want out already. Like, if the Jets take it down, it's going to be really hard for the Jets to build it back up because unlike our wonderful city, Winnipeg does not have many of those advantages.
And they love the sport up there. But it's the smallest arena in the league. It's in the Central where it's you know, you got to bring it to the table if you want to do well in the Central. But I do think that is something to watch. If Connor Hellebuyck is traded, especially to the East, there's a lot of talk of Florida trying to make a move to get Hellebuyck.
Yeah.
If he and most of the time, a guy like that, a team is going to, if there's any way to do it, you're going to trade him to the other conference so you don't have to watch him within your own division or your own conference go back at you because they know Hellebuyck is a great player. But Winnipeg has been struggling as a market. It's a small market. Even as much as they love hockey, the economics of filling that building every night have been a struggle, even when they've been good. So if they rebuild, I worry about that franchise. But their loss is Nashville and everybody else's in the Central's game because Winnipeg has been a really good winning team most of the time for the last decade or so.
One texter says, I mean, it would be the closest thing to relegation as you get for Winnipeg.
Yeah.
If the Jets were to lose Connor Hellebuyck.
If you're sitting there and you're Chris McFarland, you're trying to figure out, okay, I got the three big grizzly bears at the top. I got Colorado. I got Minnesota. I got Dallas. We know they're going to be good. You got Utah that's looking like they're moving in the right direction. How do I – can we get into the playoffs even if we wanted to? Now, if you're telling me Chicago's still not there and you're telling me Winnipeg has traded Hellebuyck, you know, it changes the picture a little bit, right?
615-737-1025. I guess we will be closely monitoring Elliot Freeman's Twitter account because it sounds like something big is
brewing.
Something is brewing. 615-737-1025. We'll take your reaction, and we will wrap up the show coming up next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you live at First Horizon Park. Fans filing in for tonight's game between the Sounds and Gwinnett Stripers. First pitch, 6:35 p.m. on 94.9 The Fan. Dylan in Antioch says, Elliot left that little nugget at the end. That's got to be it. So Dylan thinks the call Elliot took when he had to leave our show unexpectedly was about Connor Hellebuyck being traded to Carolina. Because Elliot left us with that little piece of information at the end.
If I had to guess, could be Carolina.
Yes.
His last words was walk-off.
Yes. So, makes you think.
You never know.
You never know. Darcy on our text line says, the thing I'm thinking about is the bidding losers for Connor Hellebuyck. They might view UC Soros as a consolation prize and give a big offer.
Well, of course, UC Soros has the no movement clause.
Correct.
So you have to go down that road if you're going to go down that road. You know, at this point, we'll see what direction Chris McFarland decides to take. I do think this, with the changing market, and I think if there's one thing you take away from this show, whether you like certain trades or don't like certain trades, and you think it's costs a lot or this, Alex Tuch signing $10.5 million, which is higher than any Predator has ever made. And Alex Tuch is a good player. He's not an all-star. We just talked, somebody asked about Matt Wood. Could he be a superstar? Alex Tuch is not a superstar, fair to say?
Yeah, he's not
but
a superstar.
But in this new market, making $10.5 million, that's just going to be a good top six forward. And so keep that in mind as you go forward. So a contract like UC Soros that is – $7.74 million.
Yep.
That's nothing in the years to come. And I said this years ago when we knew the cap was going up. It doesn't break your bank anything close to it. It's a good contract. And he has the no-move clause. Same thing with Marchessault. Now at Marchessault at 5 point whatever.
5.25.
That's a easily – people have plenty of cap space for that. It's a matter of can you get Marchessault to buy in if you wanted to trade and say, you know, are you on board with this? Even Stamkos at $8 million at his age. Very, very economical for what he has produced the last year. So just keep that in mind. The bad – the quote-unquote bad contracts that people have referred to. In the old system, I saw the argument. Where the market is going now, those are not bad contracts now.
They're going to end up being fair contracts.
Yes, yeah. Overnight.
Yeah.
Well, as Elliot told us, the word he's kept hearing from around the league on Chris McFarland is the Predators are just trying to get better. They're trying to get better. You probably heard McFarland himself say that earlier today. And this is what we talked about a little bit yesterday. I'm wondering if McFarland can do a little bit of both. So I used this example, I think I used this example yesterday. Before the Panthers traded for Brady Tkachuk, they made a trade with the Seattle Kraken and got the 25th overall pick in the draft and then used that pick along with their 9th overall pick, a future first-round pick and a second-round pick, to bring in Brady Tkachuk. So could Chris McFarland make a deal involving one of the key Predators players? In certain situations, the players would have to sign off on it. But could McFarland trade one of those players, net a lot of draft capital or a top prospect, and then package that with assets they already have to take a really big swing on a player that could, in theory, make them better?
Do you think, Adam, I'll answer your question by throwing a question back at
sure.
you. To me, it's not about one player right now. Like a big splash for one player.
Yeah, they're not one player away or anything.
They're
like
not
that.
One player away, but if it's a guy who's 26 or something like that, you know, that's worth looking at for sure. But I think it's probably unlikely that they do something like that. I think they want to continue to sort of flood the prospect pool with as many good chances to have good players, really good players, everywhere in between as they can. And in the meantime, that to me, we're just trying to get better. That falls in line with these moves that he made with Colorado. He just thinks that, you know, Ross Colton and Jack Drury are not old players, and they are both better. And I don't think you could really argue. As much as people, the personalities of Fedor Svechkov and Zach LaRue are off the charts. We loved covering them. They're popular with the fans. But they're not as good. They've not accomplished as much. Anywhere close to what Ross Colton and Jack Drury have accomplished, right? So that's a definition of they made their team better. It's not a big splash, but on the margins, I think it's an improvement, at least for now. Would you agree?
Yes. One texter says, we need an update on if anybody's found a third ... baseman. I mean, I think there are some third basemen out there warming up for both teams. If you missed it at the beginning of the show, there is a wristband mixer here tonight at First Horizon Park.
Color-coded.
In the band box. It's color-coded. Whether you're single, you're taken, it's complicated, you're there for the vibes, what have you. And I said maybe somebody is here looking for a third. Pause. Baseman. So we'll see.
One of the workers have on a green.
Oh.
I see one of the guys in the blue shirt. He has on
spoken
a green band.
He's spoken for, yeah.
So people are wearing them.
So, well, come on out. I might walk over there just to take a peek.
Just to take a look.
Just to take a peek. I would put on the taken wristband.
I wonder where they come up with this idea, because the colored wristband, the only experience I have was that in the youth basketball league that my kids played in, they had a rule. And there were a couple of different leagues that did it. The West Nashville Sports League was one, and this church league that we played in right at the First Nazarene, right across the street from here. Uh-huh. The rule was, it had its upside and probably its downside. But young players, you know, third, fourth grade, everybody wears a colored wristband, the five players on the court. And It was to teach you who you guarding, right? Oh, okay. So if I'm guarding Derek, then he'll have an orange. Uh-huh. I'll have an orange. Adam's guarding Chad. They would both have red wristbands, which is good. But then, you know, if you got a mismatch, you're like, wait a minute, we got to switch the wristbands. It's not working.
I can't guard
How
him.
Do I make adjustments?
I don't know if there was a lot of switching happening.
Right, well, and that's the other thing. You were not supposed to switch, but that was hard to referee officially. The poor ref is like, I don't know. The coaches are yelling, yes. He's got the wrong color on.
It may have caused a bigger problem.
Illegal defense.
You can't guard him.
So we'll see how the colors blend tonight out in the outfield.
Yes. World Cup action continues. Let's call it what it is. It's a meaningless game, I would say, for the United States. The U.S. has already won the group, I believe. Is it Turkey? Is that how you pronounce it?
Turkey.
Turkey?
Turkey.
Turkey. How is it pronounced?
San Diego.
Yes. I'm going to go with Turkey. I apologize to all of our Turkish listeners. I believe Turkey has already been eliminated from the World Cup.
Can they improve their seed at all?
They still need to win.
You want to keep
the U.S. team
going,
still
right?
needs to win.
But they've won Group D, if I am not mistaken. And the BBC has a fantastic tool where they project the knockout round as it stands based on the standings right now. So at the moment, the U.S. is slated to play Bosnia in the first round of the knockout stage, followed by a potential matchup between Egypt and South Korea.
Okay.
And
how many advance to the knockout? Is it 32?
It's 30. It's a 32.
So it used to go from 32 to 16. Now it's going from 48 to 30.
Yes. So
this is an extra game. So
at the moment, the U.S. is projected to face Bosnia-Herzegovina in the round of 32. If they were to advance, they would play either Egypt or South Korea. There's a potential of a matchup with either Spain or Portugal beyond that.
Oh, boy.
So that's
where it's going to get real.
Uh-huh.
But everything is – you never know. You just never know what you're going to see.
Yes. So
it's been exciting.
I do wonder how far the U.S. men's national team needs to go in order for this to be considered a rousing success. I mean, two wins already –
I would say Final Four. Just off the top of my head, this is just me not being a...
I would say...
But the expectations was to get where they're at now.
Winning the group, I thought it was a very reasonable expectation. Yes. Now that it's 32, you got to win two games just to get to the final eight in the knockout. They've never been past the final eight, right?
I believe that is correct.
Well, not since way, way back. Maybe 1930-something or whatever.
Don't you consider anything in modern history. Even if they get in the final eight? That's still a big
achievement. It'd be good.
I would consider a win in the first knockout game and being among the final 16.
But they've been there before. They've been to the final 16 when there were only 32. I feel like they've gotten to the
they didn't have to win as many.
You're asking the wrong guy for U.S. men's soccer history.
Everybody's got their own view. Yes. Is Pulisic playing tonight? Have you seen that?
I have to imagine he's not.
He says he's ready.
He doesn't need to play.
They don't need him to play.
Right. You could play him for a few minutes, take him out, or you could wait.
Give him a sweat.
Have him dressed and then come in if you need him, or just get him a few minutes or just sit him.
One texter says they need to beat England in Philadelphia and everything else after that doesn't matter.
Oh, okay.
Man, England, they're always full of drama. Always full of drama.
The other matchups today in the World Cup. Ivory Coast defeated Curacao 2-0. Ecuador defeated Germany 2-1.
Ooh, big win for Ecuador.
Japan plays Sweden. Tunisia plays the Netherlands. And Paraguay plays Australia. So those are the other matchups today.
Paraguay and Australia are in the U.S.
Yes, they're in the group. They're in the U.S. group. One texter said... Yesterday, you guys mentioned the Predators' historic trend of first-round misses. Do you think Chris McFarland makes wholesale changes to the scouting department after the draft?
I'm curious about that. I don't know about, you know, clearing the decks of everybody, but I think what we've seen so far, is he has blended bringing in a couple of guys that he's familiar with that have outside viewpoints, different perspectives. They have different networks, like Jamie Langenbrunner, the Boston, where he has been an assistant GM. That's been a place where people have done a lot of winning. And you've got Rob Blake, who we talked about today of being sort of a rival GM of McFarland in the same division for the Kings for a long time. And he mentioned Rob Blake has a very, very deep friendship with Joe Sakic, which is Chris McFarland's big mentor from Colorado when they played together. So I would imagine over the years, maybe you sprinkle in some more outside eyeballs.
But you don't do no wholesale changes in the scouting department.
Yeah, and it's hard to come in when he came in and just clear everybody out right before the draft. Like, right. the groundwork's already been laid on that. So that's something to watch down the road. He was even asked specifically about the decision about Andrew Brunette today. And he said, it didn't make sense to come in. He said, I want to get to know Andrew Brunette and the coaching staff. And then as we go forward with the season, then he'll evaluate and kind of go from there. Maybe we'll find Andrew Brunette is a really good match for Chris McFarland. You might find the opposite. And he's got the flexibility to sort of wait and see right now.
One texter says, does it feel like insider trading with Chris McFarland and his former team because of the two trades he's made so far? I mean, Chris McFarland clearly has inside information.
Yes. Well, he admitted that today.
Yes, okay.
He said, I had a pretty good idea that those two players were available.
Before he took this job, he probably knew.
He was in there. They talked about it. He was in the meetings with all those guys.
Yes. So there's nothing that says he can't trade with his
that's
old
team. That's not insider trading.
No. Not at all.
Yeah.
Not illegal whatsoever. That'll do it for us today. We will be back tomorrow live from the BetMGM Sports Lounge inside Bridgestone Arena as the Predators prepare for the first round of the NHL draft. Remember, we have draft coverage starting right after our show tomorrow, featuring Willie Donick and a cavalcade of other Predators broadcasters. In the meantime, have a wonderful rest of your evening. Stay cool. It's hot as hell out here, and it's only going to get hotter. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 3.
Be loving your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful day. I love you. The team loves you. You hear that music. Don't you forget about us, because we will not forget about you. You will hear us on these airwaves once again at start at 3 p.m. on 102.5 The Game. And as I always say, we're going to be talking and
you're going to be listening.
Peace.